I'm Dr. Leif Tapanella from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Today our guest is Larry Larson, owner of Snake River Fly Shop and a fly fishing guide for over 20 years. We'll be talking about fly fishing in southeastern Idaho and getting our young generations out on the water. This should be fun.
This is going to be great. Fishing in Iowa and Minnesota is not the same as fly fishing in Idaho.
I bet it isn't. We've had a number of shows now talking about the quantity of rivers that exist in our state, almost the best state really in the lower 48 to be on moving water, and there's fish down there.
There's lots of fish down there.
Darn right. We're going to talk a lot about that. Can you tell us about some nature news?
You bet. So there's a study coming out of Lehigh University in Pennsylvania concerning chickadees.
Chickadees. And one of my favorite birds.
Absolutely. Chick, chick, chickadee. No, it's chickadee-dee-dee.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah.
I thought there was a cheeseburger.
There could be a cheeseburger.
I thought there was a cheeseburger in their call. Anyway.
I know. Everything we do for bird songs, right? But chickadees can smell.
Okay.
And what the study was looking at is an area, it's a hybrid area, hybridization area. Basically, it's an area where two different species of chickadees kind of cohabitate, the Carolina chickadee and the black cap chickadee. And they wanted to look at, with mate selection, how these chickadees can kind of keep separate.
Okay.
From the two species of chickadees. And they realize is that the black cap chickadee and the Carolina chickadee smell different. Okay. And each species was selecting the appropriate mate based on the smell. So a Carolina chickadee will not choose a black capped chickadee because it smells incorrect.
It smells
bad.
Well, this is good. This is good to know. I'm going to apply this knowledge somehow.
Okay.
I'm not sure how yet.
I don't know either. I mean, I've taken a lot of public transit in my life, and there are some humans that probably smell extremely bad.
Does that change your selection choices here?
Yeah, it could.
It just might. Okay.
It just might, yeah.
We won't follow that down too far.
It's the wrong stream to follow.
Indeed. We like to start off our show with a little trivia. And today, of course, since we're dealing with fly fishing, this is a fly fishing trivia question. An upstream dead drift presentation is usually used for what type of flies? Is it A, Crazy Charlies, B, Dry Flies, C, Bass Poppers, or D, Steelhead Streamers? I love all those names.
Aren't they great?
They make me happy.
Yes, they do.
We're going to find out the answer to that right after the break when we start talking about fly fishing.
This is KISU-FM Pocatello, Idaho Falls, Rexburg. Also available on your Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.
All right, we're back. I want to welcome Larry Larson to the show. He's the owner of Snake River Fly Shop, and he's been guiding for over 20 years. So thanks for stopping by The Nature of Idaho.
You bet. My pleasure.
Well, so you're a fly fisherman. Where did you grow up?
You know, I grew up here in southeastern Idaho, way up north in Idaho Falls, and then moved to Pocatello to go to school in 91.
Back in 91. And so how did you get into fly fishing?
You know, I did some fishing with my folks as a kid, but as soon as we got driver's licenses, you know, in junior high, we kind of got to run wild. And part of those wild places were all around southeastern Idaho, lots of rivers and lakes and streams and ponds and stuff. So kind of cut my teeth early stomping around on the creeks of southeastern Idaho and the rivers.
Right on. I was going to ask about seasonality. Is this a sort of a year-round sport that you can get into?
Absolutely. You know, except for some of the very coldest of days.
Yeah.
And you don't want to go outside and do anything anyway. We have great fishing opportunities in southeastern Idaho. A lot of our streams are open to year-round fishing, and as far as some of the lakes that don't freeze as well, as well as the lakes that are frozen, whatever your flavor. You know, Peter and I talked about ice fishing earlier.
It's a little bit different in Minnesota.
Yeah, a little different than and hard to hit a fly or hit that little hole,
a hole with a fly. Yeah. But you can drive your truck out there.
You
and keep
sure
warm.
Can. It's easier access to some of our public access. But yeah, you know, we have some great opportunities here on the Snake River that runs through the region. Most of the stretches of that Snake River are open to winter fishing. Typically, they are going to require that it's no bait, typically barbless hooks. And there are some catch and release only stretches, such as the stretch below American Falls. But they're open year round. And as long as the weather's halfway decent, fall and in spring are some of our best seasons, you know, especially this fall is setting up to be a really nice one. So.
Yeah, you've been fly fishing for well over 20 years. What really drew you into fishing to begin with?
You know, like I said, I think just the beautiful rivers and streams that we have here in southeastern Idaho. I knew at an early age that if I was going to stick in this business, I wouldn't have to travel, that the industry would come to me. And right. I think that's definitely what we're noticing. You know, Boise is one of the fastest growing cities in the country. And I think southeastern Idaho's tagging right behind. Everybody's finding out that we live in some absolutely beautiful country with fantastic opportunities. So I knew I wouldn't have to travel, one. And two, you know, my mom had a macrame shop in her basement, a craft store. And I got into fly tying at probably about seventh grade and realized that I had most of the materials were just crafts. And so started tying flies, you know, with stuff that we made up and stuff that we could borrow and steal from the fly or the craft shop. And that kind of really got me hooked. The fly tying part, making your own lure, going out and catching a fish on something that you had made. You know, and then the guiding aspect of it too kind of cemented everything for me. Started guiding in 93 in Montana. And then 96, I believe, went to the Lodge of Palisades Creek, just below Palisades Dam, and still currently work for them. And just met some great people, and it's a pretty nice office, like Peter and I were talking earlier.
Yeah, getting outside, you can't beat that.
Right. Well, so can you tell me, I've fished, but I've never fly fished, okay? So can you, I've seen people doing it. There seems to be an art form to the motions you have to go about, you know, casting.
I've watched the river runs through it, and it's just beautiful. Fly fishing, yeah,
for sure.
Well, so and Brad Pitt.
Yes,
Brad Pitt, yeah. Majestically looking onward. You know, what doors open up when you're fly fishing as opposed to other forms of fishing?
Well, I think that's a big one. You know, the romance of the curve of the line, the arc, you know, along with the places that we're doing it, the rhythm of the streams, all the stuff goes together. But what really drove me nuts, and I think a lot of fishermen that I hear from, especially younger fishermen, is sitting on a bank and watching a bobber, you know, set out in the middle of a steel pond. That drove me nuts as a kid. So having something to do, you know, yeah. And there's the beauty of the fly rod versus the spin or the bait rod is it's an active cast. It's a dynamic thing. You're kind of part of it. You're moving together, one with the fly rod, the line, and eventually the fly onto the water. And so you're not bored. You're not just watching a bobber, you know, and eating snacks and having a soda and a chair. You're really actually out there, active player in the environment, and somewhat of a predator, if you will. So it's a little bit of hunting as well.
Well, so tell me what goes into all of the motion, and what's the objective? Obviously, the objective is to catch a fish, but you're trying to mimic behaviors. Is that
absolutely? Okay. We're one trying to be an effective predator, if you will. Even though most of the time we let these guys go.
Sure.
But, you know, they're pretty wary. You know, they see everything that goes on above them. They feel the vibrations of anything walking along a stream, very sensitive to their environment. So just simply approaching and getting into a position where you can effectively try to target a fish with an artificial lure or fly can be part of the challenge. And then being able to operate the fly rod as an extension of yourself and to place a fly on the water or in the water that doesn't look like it's connected to a, I like to call us the evil uprights sometimes when it, you know, trout may look at humans as a peak predator. apex predator. But try to make that fly act as though it doesn't have a leader on a fly rod and a human being attached to it is pretty difficult. So that kind of involves a lot of getting to understand how currents work, how streams work, what a fish's diet would be, and then in turn, ultimately, how to select a fly that imitates that food source that, they're keying in on and to survive.
So in a sense, you're also kind of looking at the seasonality of the insects.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They all have their own time to shine. You know, pretty much all the time, there's some sort of a hatch, an aquatic invertebrate that's hatching, maturing as an adult and coming out of our streams and lakes. Almost every standing piece of water probably has a midge population in it. And they hatch and emerge year round. So we realize the seasonality, you know, the big hatches that come in the early summer, such as the big stone flies and stuff like that. I mean, they bring migratory birds from the coast. They also bring migratory humans to our rivers. And it's what some have written to say that the trout may get upwards of 70% of its caloric intake in a season during that salmon fly hatch. So it's very seasonal, absolutely. And it changes as the seasons change.
So when you were, and you still are tying your own flies, when you're making these flies, are you trying to mimic these insects, or is there patterns or colors within the fly tying process that really don't necessarily mimic the insect, but somehow the trout absolutely love?
Yeah, that's definitely... the big question, you know, the big gray matter. We do both, you know, and we try both. Some things don't always work. So we tie fly patterns that literally look almost identical to the real natural insect. We also tie patterns that don't really resemble the insect at all, especially in color and features. We may imitate the size of that insect and some of the proportions, but some of our best flies are definitely not colors we find in nature. Blues, purples, lots of very bright pinks and reds. So I think there's a lot to be said there. There's a lot of attractor value that goes into the flies that we tie, and also in the way that we present those flies. This time, or during the fall, we have a very interesting insect, the Clesenia stonefly, that emerges on the Henry's Fork, the South Fork, and the Madison Rivers, a lot of them. And they are a nocturnal stonefly that doesn't fly when it goes to find its mate. It actually emerges at night, and it has big, much bigger legs than a standard stonefly, no wings, and it skitters across the surface during evening and nighttime hours to find a mate. And so the way we will imitate that particular hatch that time of year is we'll throw really bright, gaudy flies that have a lot of rubber legs and stuff like that that make a lot of commotion on the water. And we'll strip that fly and drag it across the surface as fast as we can to induce the strike to imitate the action of that insect versus the exact imitation.
That's fascinating. So, yeah, so you really have to have an understanding of what the food sources are available at that time, the behaviors of those food sources, and then how those change within the diets of the fish that you're working with in the locations that you happen to be. And so there's so many variables. I can see the intensity that you have to follow these.
For sure. You know, and you don't necessarily need to know all that and be, you know, a PhD in fly fishing to go out and have a good time and catch fish on our local rivers and streams. But it's a lifelong pursuit, you know, and some days are better than others.
I bet they're all good days, though.
Definitely a beautiful office.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Totally.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about some of the rivers, some of the locations? You won't give us your best location, I'm sure. Where Southeast Idaho fishermen go? What are some
absolutely
places?
You know, I definitely think that our biggest, you know, our largest piece of water that is the biggest and longest piece of water is the Snake River. You know, it starts, you know, hits the border in Alpine, Wyoming, and runs, you know, down through Idaho Falls, Shelley, Blackfoot, makes a curve just south of Blackfoot, and then heads west and runs, you know, all the way out to the Oregon border eventually becoming into the Columbia. So it's a huge river with a lot of different sections, a lot of different types of water, and a lot of different species, you know. In the very far reaches, you have native cutthroat trout that are, you know, been around for, who knows, thousands and thousands of years. They're still a predominant feature up there, all the way down to white sturgeon that are living here below American Falls Dam. All those, all that river, at different seasons, fishes differently, but it usually fishes very well, being a large river like that. Then, of course, the Portneuf River that runs right here in Bannock County, upstream at its head out of Chesterfield Reservoir, is a world-class stream, spring-fed, gorgeous water with cutthroat trout, rainbow trout, some brown trout, excellent fishery, and then winds all the way down here through Pocatello, which in the 70s, at one point in time, prior to me getting here, reportedly was a blue ribbon stream, fantastic fishery. And there's a lot of work being done by the Portneuf Vision Project right now, and Hannah and those guys. They're cleaning that river out. They're clearing some stuff out and getting rid of some of the garbage, repairing it, if you will. And with increased flow and increased habitat, those fish will come out of American Falls, which is another one of our fantastic fisheries here. Designated a super reservoir by a lot of biologists, which is a very productive reservoir that generates rapid growth and great nutrient cycling. The Portneuf's connected right to it. And with the work that we're doing on there here in Pocatello, I think in the future we'll probably see fantastic fishing real close to town. So all those streams are great. And then our lakes that we have here in southeastern Idaho, down towards Preston and Malad, have a variety of bass, trout, bluegill, crappie, that type of thing in them, and are all fantastic fisheries close to home. So.
Lots of options, right?
Lots of options.
We're always really interested in seeing how people can connect with nature in whatever ways that they can, frankly, and there's so many different ways. And part of our mission is getting young people to find their way into loving nature in, again, in the various ways that they can. Can you tell us a little bit about fishing for our younger set?
Yeah, that's a tough catch. Yeah, especially these days, there's a lot of other
distractions.
Well, competition, maybe.
There's a lot of fishermen throwing stuff for their bidding for their attention.
That's
a huge part for us. You know, is the future of our fisheries. If we don't have a voice, we don't have people utilizing our natural resources. You know, who knows if those may get boarded up and we may not have access to those anymore. So that's always been a big goal of mine, is to ensure that we get our youth involved in fishing and outdoors. And, you know, we have a pretty good program going at ISU. There's been a great program for the last 14, 15 years, I believe, in the PE department, which I've been fortunate enough to teach some of those classes. We have fly fishing classes up there, as well as fly tying. So that's brought quite a few folks. Most of my customers, you know, or a lot of my customers come from that class. As well as we've recently started a program called Trout Scouts USA. It's in conjunction with Bannock County Juvenile Probation, as well as a grant provided by the Health Department in Idaho and the state of Idaho. It's an after-school program catered to 11 through 15-year-olds. It's once a week for 2 or 3 hours, and we have a great program set up for them. It's 15 weeks long. It's set up to be more of a mentoring program, continued ed, so lifelong skills, get them involved with fishing and tying, fly fishing, excuse me, and tying flies at an early age, and then meeting some kids that have like-minded interest. And so far, so good. It's going great. We have 8 kids that are going through the program that'll finish up in just before Christmas. And then we will have another 15-week program beginning in January. And so you can contact Bannock County Juvenile Probation, either us down at the fly shop or the school district 25 as well, and get an application to get into that 15-week program. You know, we're kind of a believer of bugs, not drugs, fly boxes, not Xboxes. So the more kids we can get out there doing it, the better off I think we'll all be.
Sounds like an amazing program. I was lucky enough that my parents loved to be outside, love to fish. And so we grew up actively fishing with the family. There are times, and I know there's kids that might not have access to an opportunity like that. And then to be able to work with Bannock County and you guys and getting these kids out to learn fly fishing, and it is an art form. I think you've mentioned that earlier on, and it's an art form, and it's, you can see how easily it is to create a passion towards fly fishing, because it's just not, you know, I keep thinking when I'm casting in a lake or a river in the Midwest, it's a flick of the wrist, and then you hit your one spot, and if they're not hitting off of your one lure, you switch a lure, you know, so it's not necessarily as complex as to what the fish are feeding off of, you know, what insects are hatching. And so there's a science behind it. There's a skill behind it that really, in many ways, just like Brad Pitt, demonstrates the beauty of the environment you're in.
I agree 100%. It's a great way to get out there and enjoy our outdoors, you know, and it's a lifetime sport. You know, it's something people do up until, if you're lucky enough, you know, your very last days. So, yeah. And you probably still haven't figured it out by then.
No, but you've had a lot of fun doing it. So if there's adults out there like Leif and myself who are interested in fly fishing, what kind of opportunities or options do we have?
Well, you know, there's some great opportunities in southeastern Idaho. There's also a class up at continuing education workforce training through ISU that puts on, I believe, a 2 or 3 week, one night a week, introduction to fly fishing. We do introduction to fly fishing clinics typically monthly out of the fly shop. As well as we have a great club, Southeastern Idaho Fly Fishers. President of that's John Taylor, works over at Element Outdoors. That club has been going for about 35 years now, I believe, maybe 40. And they have all sorts of events and information how you can get involved and get the basics of fly fishing out there. So a lot of different opportunities to do it.
You've been in the business for, you know, a couple decades or more. How are things shifting, I guess? How have you seen a change at all in who's doing the fishing, the quality of the fishing, that sort of thing?
Absolutely. A lot of changes, you know, very dynamic as the environment changes. We see changing fisheries, you know, some for the good and some for the worse. We don't have the steelhead or the anadromous fish populations that we used to, you know, coming up the salmon and snake. But we do have very well-managed local fisheries. And in the, you know, over the decades, you know, inside the industry, the big, you know, funny, Peter's talking, you know, about Brad Pitt, you know, fishing in a river.
It did good for you.
But yeah. We call in the industry, we have periods, and it's pre-movie and post-movie.
Yeah.
And post-movie definitely showed a bigger interest, mm-hmm. more participants. And currently, we're seeing a lot more younger folks getting into it, you know, college-aged, high school and college-aged kids and people that just want to get out and start enjoying the outdoors. Fly fishing is one of those ones that it seems to be very attractive to them, to get a great way to get started in that, you know, without having to go bag a 6-point bull elk or that type of thing. So, yeah, definitely an increase in the youth in the younger folks and a lot more people doing it.
And it's an easy sport to get started in. You know, we can go right down to Snake River Fly, and you can help us with the equipment that we need. We don't have to be intimidated with, I've never really purchased a fly rod, I have no idea what to use. You can walk us right through that whole entire process.
Absolutely, you know, and that was a big thing for me when I decided to open a shop was, you know, I grew up as, you know, kind of the oddball out, you know, the young kid that would spend his lunch money in the fly shop 2 blocks from IF High. And it was tough to break through to some of the old stuffy, you know, the smoking the pipe and the tweed jacket days of fly fishing. You know, nowadays, especially at our shop, there's no dumb questions. We're there to help, you know, and that's our biggest thing is providing the service and getting people into a sport that we think that they'll really enjoy and ultimately be better for our environment and our outdoor recreation opportunities. So
Well, that's fantastic. We really appreciate it. You know, there's one outstanding thing we have to deal with, which is our trivia question.
Oh, no.
Oh, my goodness. We're putting you on the spot here. So the question was, an upstream dead drift presentation is usually used for what type of flies? Is it the crazy Charlies, the dry flies? We've got bass poppers, my favorite name right there, or steelhead streamers?
Wow, that's definitely a great question. Well, a dead stream drift would tend to be that we want that thing to look as natural to the real insect or the real prey item as possible. So I know it's probably not the bass popper or the crazy Charlie. I would have to probably go with the dry fly.
Very nice.
Excellent.
Very nice.
I'm going to go with that because I don't even know what a dead drift presentation is.
Come down and learn.
Okay, perfect. We can do that. All right. We want to thank Larry Larson for joining us today and to learn more about his work and the Trout Scouts. Please visit snakeriverfly.com. Shows are recorded here at the studios of KISU Pocatello. Visit us at KISU.org for questions, comments, and audio for all our programs. Our theme music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock. And please remember to get outside and enjoy the nature of Idaho.